Exactly 1 year ago today, Governor Gretchen Whitmer held a news conference.
We're here today because we have identified the first presumptive positive case of coronavirus in Michigan.
She sat at a table with Dr. Jonae Khaldun, a familiar face to most of us at this point, and a Michigan State police captain.
I've signed an executive order declaring a state of emergency in order to maximize our efforts and assist local governments and officials to slow the spread.
Most of us didn't know it then, but everything about our lives was about to be turned upside down. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It feels hard to try and put words to what has happened since that press conference. 500,000 dead across the country. Michigan's death rate saw the largest year-over-year increase since the 1918 flu pandemic. About 16,000 people in the state have died from COVID-19. Schools have closed down. Businesses went dark. Frontline workers risked their health and lives to get people the goods and services that they rely on. And then there have been the million little unique ways each one of our lives shifted. Relationships that grew deeper or fell apart. New ways of working and socializing. A little bit later in the pod, we're going to hear what life has been like for one funeral director guiding families through the grief of the pandemic. But first, let's hear from folks in their own words about how life has changed for them over this past year.
Well, I'm alive, so that's definitely positive.
I'm still here. I'm still living. I'm very grateful to still be here.
COVID is a really bad situation in a lot of ways, but I think it really taught a lot of us how to appreciate the little everyday things and be optimistic about everyday life.
Plus, it actually helps me, you know, get to understand myself as well as a person. You know, it helped me meditate and reflect on a lot of things too.
When we were in lockdown, seriously, at first it was strange. I enjoyed it because I had time with just me.
I feel like I've had more time than I've ever had, and I wouldn't say I like learned a new language or anything, but I've walked the city more than I've ever walked the city in my entire life.
You get bored. You start going, as they say, cabin fever. You want to do something crazy, like, I can't do this. I can't stay in the house.
My diet has changed because now I'm cooking. I mean, really cooking. I mean, cooking every day. We're cooking vegetables. Oh, we got to go get some more vegetables, right? So I think we're feeling better.
I mean, my work was extremely affected. I'm a hairstylist, so we were obviously shut down for a couple months, and my salon is really big on weddings, and weddings have completely changed this year, so that's definitely been a negative attribute.
Really, it slowed down a lot of my work because by me being a sound engineer, I don't travel as much as I used to.
Well, one thing that happened, I started a business in the pandemic. So, you know, that, I think it birthed a lot of businesses.
I feel like I appreciate like the relationships I have in my life a lot more because I was like so like go, go, go all the time and like focused on my career that I didn't really take a second to just, you know, hang out and live in the moment. And that's kind of what COVID like forced me to do. So appreciate it in that way.
You know, being at home all day, you know, and sitting there talking to your cousins and your aunties and all them, and you know, your mommy and dad, it gets you closer to them than anything. And plus you get to learn them a little bit better, you know.
I'm married, so it's like date night is different now. So, you know, coming up with different ways to be home but still keep your loved one in mind, or keep your partner in mind, your husband or wife in mind. And
don't divorce your husband during the pandemic.
Hopefully this open up a lot of people's eyes. You know, like, don't take life for granted because it ain't. You be here today and gone tomorrow. You know, I lost quite a few people from this pandemic, you know. Frat brothers, you know, sorority sisters and all that. Even church members, you know, so, yeah.
If I stop and think about the people that I lost. But you can't hold on to that because it's too much. You're overwhelmed. So many people, I just can't even believe it. But to just have somebody that's just up and like vital and active, and then have them just disappear, that is a hard pill. That's a hard pill to swallow. And I don't know how long it can possibly take you to get past that.
That was Helen Hill, Nikai Lowry, Alicia McKellar, Rasha Thomas, Deborah Young, Emily Nichols, Penny Irvin, and Brianna Baldwin. It's time to take a quick break. When we get back, what it's like to be on the front lines as a last responder, caring for the deceased and their families in COVID times. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
It's easy to come up with a list of ways that life has been changed by the pandemic. What's harder to think about is the great human toll. Hundreds of thousands of parents, siblings, friends, neighbors, colleagues, and community members lost to something as inexplicable as a fast-moving global pandemic. How do you mourn a loss that's that big and that overwhelming? Here to help us think about the loss and grief of this moment is Patty Lynch, funeral director at Lynch and Sons Funeral Home in Clawson. Hey, Patty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What's the past year been like for the funeral home?
You know, it's been obviously at times sad and stressful. There's also been strangely beautiful moments as people have tried to process this with as much grace and hope as one can muster in such a terrible situation. It's a little bit mysterious for me because in some ways I recognize the profound nature of the past year in comparison to many other years. And yet at the same time, you know, since I was a little boy, I can remember being around dead bodies quite often. And so, you know, it's for us, I think it was a major challenge in many ways. And yet at the same time, we're accustomed to getting the dead where they need to go, whether it's into the grave or into the fire or wherever it may be. A year ago, the spring of 2020, April and May and so forth, when the death rate was really spiking, that was really a lot to process because at that point, funerals as we know it weren't even really happening. It was really about efficiency. And it was about getting people buried and cremated as quickly as possible. And I came home every night and I think drank nearly a bottle of wine every night.
Yeah.
just kind of getting through it, you know, was the task. And then since then we've seen a return to, you know, some normalcy. There are still, you know, challenges, but we're definitely experiencing much more normalcy than we were a year ago.
I have a logistical question.
Sure.
How have you been helping people figure out mourning at a time when, you know, the physical comforts of other people are just not possible and smaller gatherings are an absolute necessity?
Well, you know, there's an old cliche that joy shared is joy increased and grief shared is grief diminished. And there's a lot of truth to it. I mean, we process our sadness, you know, with each other historically as human beings. And so to see people grieve in isolation, to me was perhaps the most difficult part. As I mentioned, you know, whether it sounds callous or not, I don't know, but I'm accustomed to death, obviously, but I was not accustomed to seeing people have to grieve alone. And, you know, seeing a husband or wife of, you know, 60 years die and the spouse have to, you know, quarantine for a couple weeks, you know, that to me was insult to injury. Since then, you know, we've been able to manage getting people in to pay their respects, to offer their sympathies, keeping the numbers down by allowing people to come and go. And that's been incredibly cathartic, I think. I mean, it's amazing. We obviously, as funeral directors, believe in funerals, and we're one of the first cultures in the history of the world for whom funerals have become optional. You know, it's striking the number of people that just don't have them anymore. The body gets cremated and that's the end of it.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, over half the population is cremated. Now, a lot of those people have traditional services first, or at least have visitations or wakes or something, and then the body's cremated. But for so many people, they've associated over the last 20, 30 years cremation with immediate cremation and nothing beyond that. And, you know, that just simply wasn't possible for other cultures, because they were so intimately connected to the dead. They actually had to get the dead out of the house and into the grave or into the fire themselves. They might have an undertaker to, you know, provide the casket and assist a little bit, but this was essentially a community task. And so now, you know, we've figured out ways to outsource this type of thing to individuals like me. And I think that we're the lesser for it. If nothing else, I think COVID has shown a lot of people just how valuable and meaningful and ultimately cathartic funerals are, and our need for one another, especially when, you know, we're facing, you know, sort of these existential mysteries. And so I'm hoping that the silver lining is that people will recognize more than ever the beauty and necessity of funerals and what they mean for a society.
Patty, I kind of assumed when we started this conversation that you would have dealt with a lot of deaths of people who died because of COVID, but obviously that can vary a lot geographically around Michigan. Have you had a lot of families whose loved ones died from COVID?
Yeah, the number has definitely decreased. We had our fair share. As I mentioned, about a year ago, that's when we really saw, like, for example, the location that I operate here in Clawson. As a family, we operate 7 locations, but I'm here, you know, pretty much every day. You know, we saw the number of deaths nearly double over the course of about 6 weeks, 2 months. And most of that was due to COVID. But after that first few months, we definitely saw a decline into the summer, and then the fall, there was a little bit of an uptick, but nothing outrageous. So we dealt with it. We did not deal with it. Like some of, you know, our Black colleagues in the city were just overwhelmed. In fact, we went and ended up handling some deaths out of Detroit and Highland Park that we otherwise would not have probably handled. But some of the locations down there were just totally and completely overwhelmed. I mean, I heard stories that there were funeral homes that had over 100 bodies in their building at one time, which is just unthinkable. I think for us, the most we had in the building at one time was maybe 15, which is a lot. You know, normally we might have 4 or 5. So for us, it wasn't logistically that overwhelming. It was emotionally devastating, especially seeing these families, as I mentioned, you know, grieve alone and in isolation and not be able to connect with their normal, you know, religious institutions and rituals and that sort of thing. You know, for us, the COVID deaths have definitely decreased as the year went on, for sure.
Patty, I feel like people in your line of work tend to see humanity through a sort of magnifying glass. You know, we we meet you in such intense times of our lives. I imagine that that's part of what draws people to the work in different moments. But did this year give you, did it show you anything you didn't know about grieving or about how people are with their families and their loved ones?
It's a great question, and probably one that I could answer more articulately if I really reflected upon it. I mean, my uncle, the writer Thomas Lynch, funeral director, has talked about how being a funeral director in many ways is just having really, really intimate access to people's stories. And I think it's one of the reasons why his writing has been so good for so long. Just the access that he was given over so many decades. I don't know if I learned anything new. I think what I maybe already knew has been reaffirmed, and that is that we need one another to make sense of the suffering that we all ultimately experience. And I think too that the dead are more meaningful than we as a culture at large oftentimes, you know, want them to be. I think that it's sometimes easier for us to dismiss them because they're no longer of use to us. But the fact of the matter is, in my opinion, how we handle the dead will always correlate to the way in which we handle the most vulnerable among us. You know, whether it's the sick, the mentally ill, children, the elderly, the refugee, the way in which we handle the dead, how tenderly we move them from one place to the next, the meaning that we attach to those movements, there's a correlation, I believe, to our other relationships. I think one of the sort of strangest but most beautiful analogies that my uncle ever made, he was trying to sort of refute this idea that a dead body is just a shell, which is something that people like to say. And he said, you know, that's not really the case. We're embodied people. He said, if anything, I would compare dead bodies to newborn babies. They're vulnerable and they represent a new reality. And, you know, when in doubt, treat them as gently as possible. And so I hope anyway that our relationship to the dead is maybe reimagined a bit because of this experience.
Patty Lynch is a funeral director with Lynch & Sons in Clawson. Patty, thank you so much for talking to us, and thanks for your work this year.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find more Stateside to stream every weekday at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by April Van Buren. Special thanks to Michigan Radio producers Beenish Ahmed, Dustin Dwyer, and Rachel Ishikawa for pulling together the voices all across Michigan that you heard at the top of this episode. Our theme music is by 14KT, with additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be thinking about you. See you tomorrow.